Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Stephen W. Long. As you may know by now, I'm author of the novel There's a Somebody, and would love to have you check it out and check me out. You can take a look on my website, StephenWLong.com, or follow the progress on the Facebook page, which is There's a Somebody. Just go to Facebook and search There's a Somebody. Really pleased today to have Cilla McClellan as my guest. Cilla is kind of my entree into the retail part of the book world. And Cilla, among other things, owns Third Street Books, which is a terrific independent bookstore. And so good morning, Cilla.
Good morning.
Good morning. And just, I wanted to get this out, too. You have at least one other enterprise and maybe a couple, if you just want to mention what those are.
I do. Just one other one. I own another store in McMinnville called Yamhill Valley Dry Goods, where we sell shoes and clothes, and that's pretty much it. It's much more straightforward than the book industry.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Depending on where your heart lies, books are dead, or they're just coming alive, or they're changing. And what's been your experience?
So I've been a bookseller for almost 20 years now at a variety of different kinds of stores, from independents to I worked for Borders Books and Music for 5 years. And I've always done bricks and mortar retail. I've never done online sales. And the industry has changed significantly over the last 20 years, but I certainly don't think books are dead. I think that, as with a lot of industries with the onset of technology, the book industry just is evolving, and it's changing so fast because technology just allows that to happen. And I think that it's still up in the air how it's going to land. We'll see.
Right, right. I've had, similar conversations, and in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, is it really going to land? Or isn't it always in some sort of transition? But at least for the present, I think you're right. And I think the people that on the production end, which is to say publishers and maybe distributors, they certainly don't know. And they're trying to cover up. And in fact, just as an example, Archway Press is, I believe, a division of Simon & Schuster, but specifically dedicated to self-publishing. So I think that's their attempt to capture whatever part of that market may be escaping them otherwise.
And but, I think we'll see more of that too, as as self-publishing becomes. It used to have, and still does to a certain degree, a fair amount of stigma behind it. And I think because most of the self-publishing houses before, there were two or three really big ones, and they were vanity presses basically.
Right.
And I think that's changed a lot. And the big houses like Simon are realizing that they want a piece of the action. That's what I think smart business people do. And to get a piece of the action, they've got to kind of start playing the game.
Yeah, they're going to dip their toe in one way or the other. I think one thing that's happened, you talked about vanity press, and certainly that was true. And I think what that meant was, you really weren't good enough to get published traditionally, and so it was an act of desperation, you just published it yourself. I suppose that still happens. I'm sure it does. But there's also established authors who have transitioned back away from the traditional avenues and want the control of self-publishing. So there's another side to that as well.
There are, and I'm really going to be curious to see how that works, especially for people that have already published and perhaps successfully with a big house, and then decide to control the rights and the terms of the publication of their subsequent books. How You know, I mean, what the big houses offer you are not things that, there are definitely things you can do on your own. You can hire an editor, you can hire a marketing team, you can market it yourself. But those things, as I think a lot of, you know, independently published people have discovered, are really expensive and an incredible amount of work, but are so
sure.
critical to getting sales. And writing a book isn't just about selling the book, but I guess that's a whole other philosophical question on its own. Why write if nobody reads it? So,
well,
yeah,
sure.
That could be a whole other story, a whole other episode.
I had dinner with some friends a couple of nights ago, and we talked about that. And I think if you write as a way to earn income, you're really better off delivering pizzas, because
probably.
Because it just takes so much time. I think the rewards are chancy, and they're way down the road. So if you're doing it for money, go do something else. That's my feeling. Yeah. But, you know, early on you and I talked about the reluctance of a retail outlet to handle self-published books. And I think probably more a place like yours than, CreateSpace or, you know, an e-book, there's kind of no cost involved. But why were you reluctant?
So when I purchase books from a distributor or a publisher, I have two options. From the publisher, I have two. From a distributor, I only have one. From a distributor,
mm-hmm.
everything is returnable. There are some titles that are not returnable. But generally speaking, that allows me to take a little more risk
mm-hmm.
and stock books that, you know, maybe nobody's heard of this author, or it's an unusual book in translation, or it's something that's, you know, just starting to be on the scene, you know, everybody's radar, but not there yet, but I'm interested in stocking it. And I can do that with, you know, I'm willing to spend a little more money on these titles if I know that, okay, if I haven't sold it within a reasonable period of time, I can return it to the publisher. There are costs to me to do that, but,
sure.
You know, they're not insurmountable. And so I really, and, you know, the flip side is that I try to do as few returns as possible because of those costs, and I try to buy
right.
as smart as possible. So with a lot of self-published titles, that's not an option. A lot of companies like CreateSpace and Art Author House and some other of the bigger self-published houses, their books are distributed by Ingram, which is the largest book distributor in the country, but oftentimes
mm-hmm.
they're distributed at a short discount and they're not returnable. So a lot of stores like mine won't buy them. They're just not, they can't take that risk.
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes we'll take that risk because it's a person in our community who we care about and we want to support the book, and sometimes we'll take the risk because we feel confident that we can sell it. But we get asked a lot to stock books, and many of them that I see are not, they're not very interesting and they're not very good.
Sure.
And plenty of books I get from the big houses also are not interesting or not good, but oftentimes at least they've been edited appropriately and
right.
I can return them.
Right. So I think that's, my understanding of the retail end of the book business is that it's really different than most other businesses.
It
and
is, yeah.
So as an example, I owned a manufacturing company, and prices are set kind of two ways. One is you take the cost of manufacturing and mark it up, and then you compare that to competitors. So if it costs you $10 to make something and you feel like to stay in business you need to charge 20, but if your competitors are charging 15, well, gosh, you know, you're probably, unless your product is very unique, you're going to sell that thing. Books kind of
right.
go the other way, don't they? There's a price set in the marketplace, and then at your end, you pay that less some discount. So it's kind of backwards from what I'm used to.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's one of the few retail items out there that come with the price printed on the item. And there
right.
are, we are under no legal obligation to sell it for that price. Bookstores could sell their books for more, but no customer would pay more than the price
mm-hmm.
printed on the book. Unless, of course, then you get into the used book territory, and then you get into out-of-print titles or titles that have value for other reasons, and you can charge, you know, they become collector's editions or whatever.
Sure.
But just for straight-up new books, that is a challenge. The standard discount for bookstores is about 40%, give or take a few points.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not a lot when you factor in, you know, all of the costs to run a bookstore. You know, bricks and mortar store, it's pretty, you know, there are a lot of costs involved, and so the profit margins on books are very small.
Mm-hmm. And I think something else that would be frustrating to me is that you're providing this. This is a physical location. Your staff is knowledgeable. They're friendly. They'll guide you. I know I've been in your store many times and ask for help. I was looking for something for my granddaughter, but I don't really know that what
genre.
The kids are reading. And so
right.
I got some guidance. So that's the great part. That's what I like to take advantage of, and it's certainly worth the money to me. What I suspect happens sometimes is people come in, get the information, and then go order it online, and that would just make me nuts.
Yeah, and that's a problem that a lot of bookstores and just other bricks and mortar retailers are facing. It's called showrooming, where people will be in a store, and I see it all the time, and then they'll whip out their phones and they'll either take the picture of a cover of a book or
right.
type in the title, and then they walk out. And
right.
You know, that's kind of it can be challenging, and sometimes we often, especially around the holidays, get phone calls from people saying, oh, do you price match? I can get the book on Amazon for this price. And, you know, I don't. You know, sometimes I could, but I've chosen not to. Years ago, when I think it was maybe the fifth or sixth Harry Potter book came out, for the fifth one, everybody was discounting it because everyone was afraid no one would be able to sell it because Amazon and
mm-hmm.
Barnes & Noble were selling it at such a huge discount. So all the independents did too. And we didn't feel – and then the following Harry Potter book, I decided, you know, I'm not going to discount it this time. And a lot of people didn't discount it, and it didn't affect sales at all. Now, that's not always the case. Some people are more about getting a better price than they are about excitement or, you know, the experience of purchasing it in a community or in a bricks and mortar store. And
mm-hmm.
those are the choices that they have to make. But, you know, what you point out is absolutely true, is that, you know, with a bricks and mortar store, we provide things that you can't necessarily get online. You can't have an experience with somebody in your community. You can't have that conversation about recommended titles. And sure, you can use their algorithm to help you find a recommended title. But that's not really, it's not as personal. And, you know, you can't say, well, but my granddaughter doesn't like dragons. So she likes fantasy, but not fantasy
right.
with dragons in it. And that's where we can really hone in on the right kind of book. Or at least offer you more choices that way. And so I feel like a lot of what we're doing is we are educating people not just on the importance of supporting local and small businesses, but also sort of how do you value that shopping experience and what those stores bring to your community.
Well, all of that, you used the word a couple of times that I really picked up on, and that is experience, or the
mm-hmm.
experience. And in this case, it would be not just the shopping experience, but I know you do things that you simply can't get online. And what I'm thinking of is readings and signings and people coming by that you can go visit and talk to. And that is so personal. My fear is if we don't wise up, we're going to lose that. And we look at these things with nostalgia, almost as if, you know, this is something that grandma did. Boy, they used to go to the bookstore and there was the author there. Well, darn it, we still do that, but we won't if you don't shop locally.
Right. Or if you don't attend those events when they exist.
Sure.
We used to do a lot more of those events, and we stopped significantly because people weren't coming. And, you know, people think, oh, you're – I can't tell you how many times people would say to me, oh, it's so great to have a real bookstore in town that does events. And I thought, you know, we're a real bookstore even if we don't do events, but that's great. But then I never see you at any of the events. So, you know, we've cut back on doing them. They're not inexpensive to host, and it can be embarrassing both for us and the author if there's nobody there to hear them speak.
Sure.
And a lot of bookstores, you know, I go to a number of trade meetings over the course of the year, and it's not unique to McMinnville, this experience, and I think the only stores that are having real successes with traditional author events are the stores in big urban environments. And even those struggle getting attendance. There's a lot of competition these days for people's time, and people have less time to devote to those kinds of outings. And so people are coming up with, you know, unusual and creative ways to host events. Book People down in Austin, Texas, started, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago, Camp Half-Blood, and it's actually a summer camp based around a series of kids' books by Rick Riordan. And in the books, some of the kids are half Greek god, half human. And so they've developed these whole camps around this. And they run them now for 8 weeks during the summer, and I think attendance is $500 a week. And owner hired one person, and that's all this person does is manage these camps. And it's been a huge, it's been huge for them. And now it's been around long enough that kids that started at the camp are now coming back as counselors, and then that's just creating a whole culture of not just an experience that's tied with the store, but also an experience that's tied with a book. And you know, these kids are going to grow up with these hopefully very fond memories of these camps and remember how these camps evolved out of these books that they loved.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that is thinking outside the box. I'd never heard of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stores doing really creative stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Earlier you talked about people have other things to do with their time. And again, referring back to my business, we used to make products for what was called the power sports industry. So really, basically the motorcycle shops.
Right.
And a real sharp customer of ours said, you know, each of us in these little stores, whether it's Kawasaki or Honda or whoever, we think that the competition is the other Honda shop, but it isn't. The competition is the concert that's going on and the miniseries on TV. And it's all of the other distractions, Disneyland or the Hollywood Bowl or something. It's all of these things that pull people. And, boy, that's a tough one. And I would think for you guys to make what I think is one of the great pleasures of life, which is reading, but to make that as sexy as Nora Jones showing up, you know, down the street or something.
Right. No, it's true. It's, you know, it's really a challenge. And even in McMinnville, there's a lot of competition. You know, I mean, we've got theater, we've got movies, we've got other events taking place in the community and lots of sporting events with the elementary through college. I mean, that's part of what makes McMinnville such a great place to live and such a draw.
Mm-hmm.
But it can definitely be an organizational challenge.
Sure. So I kind of the elephant in the room to me is Amazon.
Right.
What, do you have a love-hate relationship, a hate-hate relationship? What, that's got to be maddening, I would think. But what is your take on that?
So I am not a fan of Amazon in any way. We sort of have a family rule. We refuse to support them in any, you know, we don't have Amazon Prime. We don't buy anything from Amazon. If I'm trying to buy something online from an independent shop and they are using Amazon's website as their distributor, which happens frequently, I go out of my way to try to contact the shop directly and buy not through Amazon.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, really the biggest people for years talked about how it was the big box stores like Borders and Barnes & Noble that were killing the independents. And there's some truth to that. I'm not denying that at all. But, you know, the reality is when, you know, when it, a lot of those independents that closed and or died or however you want to talk about it in the mid-90s weren't being run very well and couldn't change to keep up with how things were changing. And
sure.
I witnessed this at some stores firsthand. And then Amazon just kind of took over and became such an amazing way to shop. And with convenience and price and a lot of factors that a lot of stores, both small and large, just can't compete with. And so that's been a real challenge for a lot of independents. Now, a lot of independents, like myself, I just decided I'm not going to sell books online. I can't compete with them, and I don't want to compete with them. So I would rather spend my dollars on making my bricks and mortar store the best store that I can for our community. And
right.
I just have to kind of ignore them. I also think that they have, I mean, I think that there are some very smart people running that company, and but at times I wonder about their scruples. We'll just put it that
sure.
way.
Well, I think when you're so powerful, if you, you know, as an organization or an individual or anything, I think power begets that abuse. And you think you can do anything, and so the temptation is to do anything.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Definitely. There's no one there to tell you no. And if they do tell you no, you just fire them. So.
Right. Well, yeah, I suspect that the no's don't come from within the company. They come, if there's
exactly.
a complaint, it's from outside the company. So you said you don't do online sales. How about ebooks? Don't you provide that in some way?
We did for a period of time. I am a member of the American Booksellers Association, and they are a national trade organization. And about 4 years ago, they started offering a website that their members could, in essence, purchase and then use to distribute ebooks. And I decided that I was going to participate in this. And it was not inexpensive for me to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a lot of time marketing this option to the members of our community. We partnered with the library. We did some events where we taught people how to use their e-readers and their electronic devices. And, you know, the margins on e-books are very, very small.
Oh, sure.
They're between 2% and 9% is the last time I looked at it. And I should be honest that I don't look at it very often. But it got to the point where I didn't have the right personnel on staff to dedicate to helping people with their technological questions. And we didn't have sales. I mean, I think I sold 40 ebooks in 1 year. Half of them were to myself. So I realized, and even beforehand, I did lots of surveys to make sure and asking, you know, our customers, is this something that you want? Do you want to be able to buy the electronic books from us? And the answer was resoundingly yes. And so we tried it, and it's been almost a year and a half now, and we stopped offering ebook sales, and I have no regrets.
Sure.
I'm able to concentrate more fully on the bricks and mortar store. And, you know, when I talk to other independent stores that do participate, and I keep thinking, maybe I made a mistake waiting for their sales to increase dramatically, they always say, no, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that, unfortunately, Amazon has just really, they are the only game in town when it comes to that. It is what people think of first and foremost. And
well,
unfortunately,
a lot of people
don't understand that if you buy a Kindle, you can only download your books from Amazon.
Right.
It's proprietary software. And so people would gleefully come in with their Kindle and say, I'm going to buy my e-books from you. And they'd say, I'm really sorry, you can't. Thank you, though.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I was thinking 2% or 9%. Typically, I think, I'm not really into this, but e-books are awfully inexpensive anyway, aren't they? So if you have a 99-cent book and you get 2% of 99 cents,
right.
You got to sell a whole bunch of them to pay for your event to teach people how to use the e-reader.
Or even just to pay for my website. The hosting fees were quite expensive. And
oh,
so,
sure.
You know, I wasn't even getting close, not even close to covering those costs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from a business standpoint, it didn't make sense. From a philosophical standpoint, I would love to be able to have people buy all of their books from me, electronic and print. And
mm-hmm.
that is something that is not, the door's not closed for that one. It may happen sometime down the road, but for now, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I used to tell people, that I was the salesman for our company, so of course I'm full of crap. But they would complain about something. I mean, people are always wanting whatever it is, they want it cheaper. And
right.
I used to tell them, you really don't want it cheaper. You're not looking for the lowest price. What you're really looking for is the best value. And so
right.
then I would launch into my speech about why a couple of dollars more gets you value for the money. And I think that's what you in particular and independents in general offer is value. Again, I think about the experience. It's kind of, as we were talking, I thought we have now with Netflix, just, you know, I could watch a different movie every night, and I love movies and probably spend too much time in front of the TV. But it's not the same as going to a theater. That's a different experience. And,
so true.
There are some things, and the movies of David Lean come to mind, and so I'm thinking of something like Ryan's Daughter or A Bridge Over the River Kwai, something like that. That it's a different experience when you see that scenery across whatever it is, 30 feet or 40 feet, as opposed to 30 inches. It's a different thing. And to some extent, I think there's a correlation with independent bookstores. You can go
right.
in, it's cozy. In fact, you may have seen this, I think, probably several places, but there's a bookstore in Lincoln City that, you know, they have a store cat. And
right.
so, you know, you go sit in the chair and the cat comes over and it's purring and you got your favorite book and it's raining outside and you get a cup of tea. And that's different than sitting in front of your computer and ordering a book that'll be here in a couple of days.
It's definitely, It's definitely it's two different experiences, and as you mentioned too, it's all about what you value.
Mm-hmm.
Convenience, there's definitely value to convenience, especially as people's lives are busy and, you know, that factor can help, but I'd much rather have a personal interaction with somebody behind the counter.
I keep sort of coming back to this nostalgia thing, but I think we lament that that's gone, you know, that interaction, and yet we're cutting our own throat. We're the ones that are doing it.
It's so funny. I keep waiting for there to be some kind of, I don't know. I mean, people talk about it, and I think the shift is starting where more and more people are realizing that their great little communities that they love are dying because they're shopping online or shopping in the big box stores. And
sure.
People, I think, they're starting to be a backlash. It's slow. I think any kind of, you know, cultural shift like this takes time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it starts on the coasts and moves to the middle, but I think it's definitely, you know, it's starting to happen.
Analogous to that are when communities don't allow a Walmart. And to me, Walmart is kind of the brick-and-mortar Amazon. And that
right.
is they come in and they gobble up and, you know, the little mom-and-pop hardware store and the little grocery store and the little clothing store get all gobbled up, and then now what have you got? You know, you've
right.
got this the big box store that gets all the tax subsidies and everything, and they really don't employ more people, and they really don't pay very well, and so now you're saddled with this burden, and you get, for some period of time, you get maybe a lower price, but is that the quality of life that you're really looking for?
Right. Well, and that's an interesting conversation unto itself, and an argument I've had with people that I know that are close to me that have lived in communities where, you know, very rural communities where the Walmart is the center of town. And they
sure.
would tell me, I would argue with them, and they would say, Walmart is where everybody goes to see everybody. That's the center of town. And I said, right, because it is, it took over. It's the center of town that used to exist no longer is there because of Walmart. And then the
right.
other argument is, you know, we live in these communities where people are very poor and Walmart is all that they can afford. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to that, but that's, I mean, and that's one I don't know. I don't have an answer for that one. I don't have a solution.
Sure.
You know, I can understand that if, you know, you're at a point where you're really crunching those dollars, that being able to get, you know, toothpaste and toilet paper at Walmart for a dollar
mm-hmm.
50 less than somewhere else, maybe it's worth it. So I don't know. But then when I see people that I know can make those choices, otherwise continuing to support at Walmart, that's a different.
It is different. I think those people, I'm trying to, this is far afield, but there was a ball player whose wife shopped at Target, and it just seemed so incongruous, but in any case. Well, Scylla, we're getting down to the end here, but is there, now, Third Street has a website. Why don't you mention that?
We do. It is www.thirdstreetbooks.com, all spelled out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're open 7 days a week for the community, and we've got lots of really bright, interesting people on staff who read a wide variety of books, which for me is great because I always get introduced to new things by my staff.
Sure.
Which is part of why I like hiring a bunch of different kind of people.
Mm-hmm. So, people who live locally know about the place, but I would say if anybody listening is lucky enough to come visit, not only is the store itself wonderful, it's situated on such a charming little street. It's kind of like you stepped onto the set of Mayberry or something.
Exactly.
And I just love, in fact, I really think our town is two towns. There's the Third Street part of town, and then seriously, the Walmart side of town, which
it's
is no
true.
Different than, I mean, you could be plunked down in Ohio or New Mexico or any place else, and you'd have no idea where you are because it looks like everything else. But
yep.
There's a really uniqueness to Third Street, and I think you have made the area better, but you're also lucky to be there because it's such a great place.
I could not agree more, and I appreciate the compliment, but I, you know, the store itself couldn't survive in a community like that if the community didn't support it. We
right.
definitely like the visitors and the tourists. That helps. But, you know, our core customer are people that live in McMinnville and Yamhill County. So
sure.
that's, to me, those are the people that I need to make sure I'm serving most.
Okay. And before I let you go, is there anything else? Did you want to talk about Create Space, or is there anything that you... Any
no,
shop
your
local?
Experience with them is way better than mine.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't do that. I didn't go with Create Space,
right.
although a friend of ours, in fact, I had a chance to interview him a few weeks ago, Frank Lisiandro,
right.
has had some dealings with them. he just has, I think it's going to be a terrific book. And they had some technical problems getting it out, but I think it's back now available. But unfortunately, but that's the only place it's available as far as I know. Frank doesn't have a distributor, and so he's kind of stuck. And he doesn't want to, we talked about risk and so on. There's a minimum amount of books that you can print, like offset printing. You can do publish on demand, but that's really a different product. And
right.
He's reluctant to take that risk because can he really sell whatever that number is? I think he
exactly.
can. I would encourage him to do it. But there's the artistic part and then there's the economic part.
Right, so. and that's now where he has to really get out there and market it as much as possible.
Right. Well, I think he can do it too. Well,
yep.
Sheila, I'm going to let you go, but thank you so much. And I wanted
Thanks
to remind
so much
everybody.
For the chat.
Oh, this is wonderful. Now, you're in Portland today, I think, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah. Okay, well, get better. I know you said you have a little bit of a cold.
Thank you.
Okay.
And I will talk to you later.
I'll see you at the store.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks. And thanks, everybody. This is Stephen Long. And, again, just love to hear from you either at the website, StephenWLong.com, or there's really more going on at the Facebook page. Of course, that's something we do every day, and it's real interactive. I love to hear from you folks. And I'll talk to you again next week. Actually, the guest next week is going to be Phil Paragis, who owns a business selling rare books. And if you go to Paragis.com, that's Pirages.com, fascinating old illustrated manuscripts, not inexpensive. I saw one for $100,000, and that may not be typical, but they're all up there. And so tune in and give us a listen. All right? Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
but I left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money, and I wonder what you would have done.